Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth and productivity of Florida depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust encourages all businesses to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital staff members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
A rural Florida school district is on the brink of catastrophe, and it may not be alone.
We now see sort of a rising inequality, and that's really translating into our rural districts and our more affluent districts.
Also this week, think the term voter fraud only means voter impersonation? Then you haven't heard about ghost write-in candidates.
It's reprehensible. It's yet another way that office holders and office seekers are selecting their voters rather than the other way around.
We'll also find how devotion to the Second Amendment is not an exclusively Republican concept. We'll get our weekly Zika update and discover how a grocery chain is pushing lionfish as a seafood delicacy. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. We start off this edition of Capitol Report with Florida Public Radio's Lynn Hatter, and she's got some breaking news about what's really a serious situation that's facing one of Florida's more rural school districts. Lynn, what's the story?
Yes, Tom, you may remember a few years ago, the Jefferson County School District was essentially placed under what amounts to state financial control because it was on the verge of bouncing checks. And now it looks like that situation is happening again. The State Board of Education this morning decided to place the school district back under state financial control. The board suggests that the district could be running into the red this year.
Well, and we're at the start of a brand new school year, and the big question is, what's this going to do as far as affecting the kids and the teachers and the parents and all?
Yeah, so right now a lot of that is unknown. What's been happening in Jefferson County is really kind of a symptom that affects a lot of other small rural counties. The Jefferson County School District is considered a failing district, and it has been failing now for the past decade. So the situation out there is dire, and, you know, the students who are left are really the students who cannot afford to go anywhere else. It's a very bad situation, and, you know, when you speak to people in Jefferson, you hear a lot of anger, you hear a lot of frustration, but you also hear a lot of hope, and the hope is that maybe now is the point that they begin to get some assistance.
So what does it mean when the state takes over, Lynn? Does it seize control from the local superintendent and the school board? Exactly what happens?
No. So the state is actually very limited in what it can do. What's happening now is basically the Board of Education is creating a financial oversight committee that will take a look at Jefferson County's budget and try to cut out what fat there may be. But, you know, there might not be that much there to cut. I mean, again, this is a very, very, very tiny district. It does not generate enough local tax dollars to support itself. Actually, state funds end up making up the bulk of the money that goes to the Jefferson County School District. So really, this is the state kind of taking some financial oversight. But with respect to academics, all of that is still done at the school level, and this is only until really the school district gets back into the black, as they say.
Well, as you mentioned a moment ago, Lynn, this is happening in Jefferson County, which is in North Florida. It's just east of the capital county of Leon. But what about the state's other 33 mostly rural counties? Are they possibly facing the same kind of situation?
Even in other districts, Gadsden County, if you drive to Havana, there's a gigantic for sale sign in front of a school. Liberty County was recently before the cabinet expressing similar budgetary woes. I mean, this is a really big problem, and a lot of it has been the fact that students, those who can, have left these tiny districts. If you can afford to leave, you've probably left. We now see sort of a rising inequality happening with respect to haves and have-nots, and that's really translating into our rural districts and our more affluent districts.
Even though this is breaking news in Jefferson County, I suspect you're going to be checking out what's going on around the state, and will be bringing us an update on next week's Capitol Report. Florida Public Radio's Lynn Hatter. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you, Tom.
If it were illegal, it would be the perfect crime. Phony write-in candidates are stealing the franchise from thousands of Florida voters who don't even know they're victims. But as Jim Ash reports, a Jacksonville civil rights attorney is asking the Florida Supreme Court to do something about it.
Chris Schwantz, a Niceville realtor, isn't your typical candidate. He doesn't attend forums, knock on doors, or accept contributions. A write-in for State House District 4, he has no website and no intention of winning. The only reason Schwantz qualified is to stop Democrats and independents from voting in what would otherwise be a Republican primary. It's perfectly legal.
The Democrats wanted to have a candidate. They could have put a Democrat in, and the Republicans can vote for the Republican, and in the general election, everybody gets a chance at that point.
Confused? Don't feel bad. Most people aren't familiar with Florida's Universal Primary Amendment, or UPA, and why it's even in the Constitution. House District 4 is a textbook example. Since it drew only Republican candidates, the winner of the August 30 primary goes straight to Tallahassee. Independents and non-Republicans have no say. Voters thought they fixed that when they approved UPA in 1998. It lets anyone vote in a primary when there's no opposition in the general. But the courts say write-ins count as opposition. Common Cause Florida Chair Liza McClanahan says partisans are brazenly recruiting phony write-ins to game the system.
It's reprehensible. It's yet another way that office holders and office seekers are selecting their voters rather than the other way around.
Leon County Election Supervisor Ion Sancho says deliberately denying the vote to thousands of Floridians isn't the only problem. He says closed primaries tend to favor fringe candidates from both ends of the political spectrum.
Yes, the process does tend to foster extremism, and forcing partisans to have to settle the issue strictly within their own system.
A recent report by the Tampa Bay Times found that write-in candidates are denying the vote to 1.6 million Floridians in legislative races this year. But a state attorney race in Duval County proved to be the last straw for Jacksonville civil rights attorney Samuel Jacobson. In that race, write-in candidate Daniel Lee was actually a supporter of incumbent state attorney Angela Corey. And Corey's campaign manager filed Lee's qualifying papers. Jacobson is petitioning the Florida Supreme Court to invoke the UPA and open up the primary.
Basic idea of the amendment is that if a primary is for all intents and purposes going to be the actual election, then it ought to be an open primary and everybody can vote. And that's, we think, wholesome to democracy.
Jacobson estimates Lee's political ploy is denying some 500,000 Democrats and independents the right to choose their state attorney. But he faces an uphill battle. The court ruled in February, in a case called Brinkman, that the UPA cannot be triggered when a write-in candidate enters the race. Stetson Law Professor Chara Torres-Spellacy says Jacobson's chances of getting the Supreme Court to change its mind are slim.
Well, courts are very reluctant to get into what Justice Frankfurter used to refer to as the political thicket. And so it's very unlikely that, especially in light of the Brinkman decision,
it's a thorny problem, experts say, because nobody wants to discourage a legitimate write-in candidate from running for office. Kissimmee Democratic Senator Darren Soto, who was running for Congress, thinks he has a solution. He filed a bill last session that simply says write-in candidates don't count as opposition when all the candidates in a race are from the same party. The bill didn't get a single hearing.
I think it's critical for us to try to keep to the spirit of that amendment and err on the side of enfranchising voters rather than disenfranchising them.
Soto won't get another shot at passing a state law, but he says he'll encourage his successors to try. Soto faces significant Democratic and Republican opposition in his congressional race, but not a single write-in. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
The ongoing spread of the Zika virus in Florida has sparked a campaign to keep the bugs from biting. 500,000 units of mosquito repellent are being handed out through Florida's regional food banks. That announcement came today from Feeding Florida Executive Director Robin Sapley.
It will be coming in throughout the networks, units going into Miami, Tampa, Orlando, here in Tallahassee, Jacksonville. So we will cover the whole state, and there'll be a distribution starting now and continuing on, obviously.
And Sapley says it's not only mosquito repellent that's being distributed. There's also information about how to control mosquito breeding and urgings to cover up exposed skin while outdoors, all that courtesy of the Florida Department of Health.
Along with the distribution of the mosquito repellent, we'll be distributing some of their educational material also. So it'll be a one-two hit so that individuals are getting the knowledge they need along with the product.
Sapley says if the spread of Zika continues, she expects at least one more round of repellent distribution through the state's regional food banks. The repellent donation was arranged through the Feeding America organization. Still to come on Capitol Report, in two panhandle congressional districts, culture and heritage make guns a major political issue on both sides of the aisle.
You know, being able to hunt and take down a deer, that's basically a week's pay worth of meat.
Here are a couple of back-to-school questions for you. Is your child ready for class? And is your school ready for Zika?
Information to be provided to our teachers so that they can inform their students, who very often then take that information home to their parents.
And a grocery chain wants to take a bite out of the invasive lionfish.
In the perfect world, that would be the best case scenario, that we would do make them extinct in Florida waters, for example.
Florida's panhandle is a conservative stronghold that reliably sends Republicans and the occasional centrist Democrat to Congress. Because of that, Nick Evans reports conventional party distinctions don't play out the same way they do in other parts of the country.
In a campaign ad, Greg Evers is standing in front of a blue tractor, brow furrowed, speaking directly to the camera.
I'm Greg Evers. Our values are different around here. If Washington were run by panhandle values, our country would be in a better place.
His qualifications float across the screen below him. And the first one? Lifetime NRA member.
We have enough lawyers in Washington. Isn't it time we send a farmer with some common sense?
We can't trust the spineless politicians. We can't trust the lawless bureaucrats.
Conservative Matt Gaetz will fight to pass open carry, kill Muslim terrorists, and build the wall.
Gaetz and Evers are running against one another for the Republican nomination in Congressional District 1. They'll face another six competitors on the primary ballot. Both are former state lawmakers, Evers in the Senate, Gaetz in the House, and both have championed controversial gun measures. Evers backed campus carry while Gaetz backed open carry.
Well, thank you all for being here today, and thank you to all of our supporters.
And guns are a major political issue just next door in Congressional District 2. This is Mary Thomas, a Republican running to represent the 19-county district in Washington, D.C.
Today, I proudly accept the endorsement of the Gun Owners of America, and I pledge to the people of District 2 and to the people of our country that I will defend all of the Constitution, including our Second Amendment.
Range hot.
Steve Kraps is running for the same seat as Thomas, and he's a big proponent of gun rights as well. Thing is, he's a Democrat. I spoke to him at the Osceola shooting range just outside Lake City.
I was just opening the box of ammunition. I'm keeping my gun. My gun is perfectly, it's unloaded perfectly. I've checked it twice already. But it's also aimed downrange for safety.
The standard playbook often paints Democrats as anti-gun, but in the panhandle, that breaks down a bit.
The Second Amendment rights, I'm a strong believer in that, and I believe that you have the right to protect your family. If you are a legal, lawful citizen of the United States of America, you have the right to have the gun of your choice.
Kraps wants more and better background checks, with greater coordination between state and federal authorities. But he also wants to see universal reciprocity for concealed weapons licenses, so Florida license holders could carry concealed in places that don't currently allow it. Those policy proposals might not rack up endorsements from national gun rights organizations, but they're a far cry from the policies some gun owners fear.
I shoot mainly my .22s and everything because they're economical for just practicing. They're called plinkering guns, just for plinkering, shooting cans, just like me and Granddaddy used to do. And I have my great-granddaddy's, one of my favorite ones is my great-granddaddy's .22 Remington, which was copied off of a Browning. It's about 100 years old.
Like Kraps, many candidates chalk up the area's affinity for firearms to things like culture, heritage. But there's also location and raw numbers. According to Pew Research, the South is more gun-friendly than many other regions. And District 1 and 2 are heavily white and rural, two demographic groups more likely to support gun rights. And for Steve Specht, a veteran and centrist Democrat running in Congressional District 1, there are practical considerations, too.
It is a mostly rural area. I grew up in Marianna, which is the second congressional district. We lived 17 miles from town. We lived on 40 acres, and we lived for four people on a teacher's salary. You know, being able to hunt and take down a deer, that's basically a week's pay worth of meat.
Specht, like Matt Gaetz and Greg Evers, is a lifetime NRA member, but he's not seeking the group's endorsement. He's disappointed about the NRA's opposition to gun safety research and believes tax incentives could promote ownership of modern gun safes to reduce suicide, accidental discharges, or theft. But most of all, he thinks the current gun debate leaves too many Americans out.
You've got the NRA and other groups on one side that have basically stonewalled even common sense legislation. And then on the far end of that, you've got people that want to completely ban guns and get them out of society entirely. And I don't think either side speaks for the vast majority of Americans in the middle.
Still, when Panhandle voters head to the polls in November, they are likely to favor a Republican. The Cook Political Report has District 1 down as solid Republican and District 2 right behind it as likely Republican. And protecting the Second Amendment will play a big role in how those voters cast their ballot. But when it comes to firearms, voting Democrat or Republican seems to be a distinction without much difference. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
If your local schools haven't already begun classes, they soon will. And Sasha Cordner reports state officials are taking county superintendents and classroom personnel to school on what they can do to inform parents and protect the students from the Zika virus.
So far, Florida has more than 485 cases of the Zika virus that can cause severe birth defects. They include cases involving pregnant women, travel-related cases, and locally transmitted cases as well. For the past few weeks, Governor Rick Scott has been holding roundtables in different counties, some affected by the mosquito-borne disease and some not yet impacted.
I want everybody to get informed. Everybody can have an impact. No standing water in your house, your apartment, or your yard. Right? On top of that, when you're out, times where mosquitoes are biting, wear longer sleeves, longer pants, wear bug repellent. So, I mean, my goal is we don't see an expansion of the number of Zika cases we have. This state's done a very good job controlling other mosquito-borne viruses, chikungunya and dengue fever. We can do the same thing with this.
Scott has also been doing conference calls with different stakeholders, and one he was most recently a part of involved Florida superintendents who manage their own school districts.
With this new school year approaching, I absolutely appreciate your partnership as we work to take every step necessary to ensure the safety of Florida students and educators. I ask the Florida Department of Health, the Florida Department of Education, and the Florida Board of Governors to partner together to provide critical Zika prevention guidance and resources to our students, our parents, our educators, and our district leaders across the state.
And Scott says he's been in talks with some other school stakeholders on Zika preparedness as well.
I've also met with some of the members of Florida's K-12 public school system, the Florida College system, and the State University system to discuss what's currently being done in our schools and camps. Our goal is to keep an open line of communication and do everything we can to educate everybody about the risk, what we're doing to make sure we are staying ahead of the game.
While most Florida schools have started, the Palm Beach and Miami-Dade area has not. The South Florida region is the most affected by the Zika virus, making up about half of the state's cases not involving pregnant women. That includes travel-related and local transmissions. Local transmissions have largely been in Wynwood, a neighborhood in Miami. The Miami-Dade School District already started putting out automated voicemails to parents and students.
Wear long-sleeved shirts and long pants. You should also apply mosquito repellent to bare skin and clothing, especially when going outside in the evening hours, and use mosquito netting with children younger than 2 months.
While the district is relaxing its dress code a bit to allow students to cover up more, putting on mosquito repellent at the Miami-Dade County Schools is not allowed. The goal is to protect those with allergies. It's not the only school district to say that. Leon County, which recently got its first Zika case, has a similar policy, says Leon School District spokesman Chris Petley.
You know, we're very aware of the impact that mosquito repellent can have if it's put on in the presence of maybe a child with asthma or a child with other reactions. What we are suggesting is if that parents would like to be extra prepared, they can spray their children with bug repellent prior to coming to school campuses. And in more drastic measures, they can work with their individual school to send bug repellent with their child. But the application of the bug repellent would have to be made in accordance with how the school would like to do that.
And Dr. Phillip, Florida's Surgeon General, says that's something her agency is taking into account.
We're working on getting a contact name for each entity, each county, so that we can ship repellent as requested. We understand that there are some concerns that in some schools the policy does not allow for repellents, that there may be concerns about safety, exposure to others. So we are putting together information to address all those issues, and we want to ensure that that is available for the most appropriate local decisions to be made.
In addition to providing educational materials to teachers, the state has launched a Spill the Water campaign aimed at kids and is looking to launch similar prevention efforts soon. Standing water is seen as a breeding site for mosquitoes. Meanwhile, the governor has already allocated $26 million of state funds towards these efforts and says he may have to allocate more when the need arises. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Well, here's some good news, especially if you're doing some late summer traveling. Gas prices in Florida are at their lowest level since 2004. According to a AAA survey out this week, regular unleaded fuel in Florida now costs $2.05 a gallon. That's down 42 cents from this time last year. More than half of Florida gas stations are selling fuel price less than $2 a gallon. However, one side effect of the recent trend of cheaper gas is also rising auto insurance rates. And AAA says one way to save money on insurance is to just shop around. Nearly one-third of drivers do not review their auto insurance policies every year, even though rates can vary between carriers by hundreds of dollars for the same coverage. At the same time, drivers can save money by maintaining good credit, bundling auto policies with other insurance products, and paying the premium in full rather than through monthly installments. You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, lionfish are an invasive species that have moved into Gulf waters. The voracious feeders are wreaking havoc on reefs and native fisheries. But Regan McCarthy reports fishermen and a major grocery store chain are teaming up to tackle the problem by moving the fish a little lower down the food chain.
Did you find everything before?
Just outside the door of the Tallahassee Whole Foods Market, a large sign reads, "Take a bite out of lionfish. Be a part of the solution."
In the perfect world, that would be the best case scenario, that we would do make them extinct in Florida waters, for example.
That's David Ventura, the Whole Foods Florida Seafood Coordinator.
Another good situation for us would be try to, at least minimal, try to control it so it doesn't spread and get any larger. Because right now they're doing a tremendous amount of damage to the coral reef and a native species. It's just incredible.
Ventura says Whole Foods wants to be part of the solution, fighting the lionfish invasion. The grocery chain began selling lionfish in some of its Florida stores in April and has since expanded to sell the fish in all of its stores throughout the state.
Well, again, it's new. It's very, very new for a lot of people. However, there is a lot of people who are very, very aware of the lionfish and the problems it's causing. They're aware that it's an invasive species. Many of our customers are aware of the damage that it's doing to our ecosystems, our coral reefs, our native species. They're consuming it continuously. They're a ferocious eater, so right now they're doing a lot of damage. A lot of people are aware of that problem.
And Ventura is right. That's what brought customer Jay-Z Whitaker to the store's fish counter.
I've been seeing it on TV and how it's an invasive species, and the best way to get rid of them is to eat them.
Whitaker says she's excited to do something good for the environment, as well as her taste buds.
Just a little bit of oil and a little bit of our Basari seasoning, which is a good citrus blend. It's a nice seasoning salt.
Stuart Ledbetter is the fishmonger in Tallahassee's Whole Foods. Lionfish have venomous spines sticking out of their bodies, but those are removed before they're sold.
I'm gliding down the rib cage, and I am making long cuts.
Ledbetter and his team are also available to clean or fillet the fish to order. And while a simple sautéed lionfish tastes delicious, Ventura says there are plenty of ways to enjoy it.
My favorite has been the ceviche. I just love the ceviche. It's, you know, so very robust flavor, and I enjoy it.
Ventura says another great idea is to use the lionfish in a favorite fish taco recipe. And he says it can easily be used as a replacement in nearly any snapper recipe. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission encourages spear fishermen to target lionfish by hosting tournaments. The commission also provides a list of wholesalers willing to purchase any lionfish caught. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capital Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capital Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capital Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capital Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust. 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.